You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're going to love it. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you've had a great week, and I've got some great show options for you this weekend. The Prophet on CNBC is an absolute must-watch show. The host, Marcus Lemonis, is one of my most favorite guests. Extremely inspirational person. He visits eight businesses, each facing different and unique challenges during these unprecedented times. You've got to watch it. The Prophet on CNBC. Hard Knocks, the Dallas Cowboys is on HBO. It chronicles the training camp with the five-time Super Bowl champion NFC East franchise team. If you love football, you're going to love this. Even if you don't care about football, what's great about it is it's behind the scenes with the team. So you understand their personal stories, not just the players, but the coaches. And then Cribs is back on MTV. It invites viewers for a peek into the everyday and unexpected lifestyles and rituals of their favorite personalities and families. The original show was a wild show to watch, especially the Mariah Carey episode. Do yourself a favor, go to YouTube and look for Mariah Carey Cribs MTV. There's so much to unpack. I could do a whole episode about just that episode of Cribs. And by the way, maybe I should, but you've got to check it out. Cribs on MTV. This episode I'm so excited about. I've joked that I'm a NXIVM scholar at this point. Several years ago, I saw this New York Times article with a woman showing a branding on her skin, and she opened up about an organization that she'd become involved with that essentially was a cult. And I've been obsessed ever since. When my youngest daughter, Caroline, was born, and I would nurse her at night, I would stay up and read Reddit threads and this blog, The Frank Report, run by Frank Parlato, who is a former guest, and just go down the rabbit hole of this organization. Since then, I've interviewed Frank, as I've mentioned, Catherine Oxenberg, whose daughter India was a part of NXIVM. I've interviewed Kelly Thiel, who was a member of DOS, and the director of Seduced, which was a Starz documentary. Again, I have found the story to be totally fascinating. So once I saw The Vow on HBO, I knew I had to talk to Sarah Edmondson, but it's just taken me a little over a year to do that. The HBO show The Vow was a 9-episode documentary series following a number of people deeply involved in the self-improvement group NXIVM over the course of several years. It's a story of indoctrination and the step-by-step journey of NXIVM members defecting and outing the leader, Keith Raniere. The series takes a deep, nuanced look at the NXIVM organization, which faces with various charges, including sex trafficking and racketeering conspiracy against its highest members, most notably the founder, Keith Raniere, who was convicted in June of 2019 and is currently in jail. Some of the women drawn into NXIVM's elite circles, which include a secret group called DOS, which stands for basically master over slave, have described coerce sex, vigilance over their diets and daily routines, blackmailing schemes, and secret branding ceremonies at which the initials of Ranieri, Nexium's founder and self-anointed guru and member Allison Mack were seared into their pelvic area. Former acolytes have said Ranieri and Nexium tried to use litigation after they left the group, among other intimidation tactics. Several of the members of DOS were asked to give collateral in the form of graphic photos of themselves or videos or writing up things about their loved ones, which could be used against them later, and even the deed to their homes. So in the series, you could hear again from many key players in the powerful group, including documentary director Mark Vicente and his wife Bonnie. Bonnie was really the first one to leave. Prominent recruiter Sarah Edmondson and her husband Anthony Nippy Ames, who was the head of Society of Protectors, SOP. This was a subgroup within Nexium made up of Nexium males who follow the wisdom and teachings of the Vanguard, which was Keith Ranieri, on how men should behave with women, which once you start to unravel the teachings are extremely misogynistic and disturbing. So, as mentioned, Sarah Edmondson is featured in The Vow on HBO, and I've been waiting for over a year to get the chance to talk to her, and she is my guest today. So, here we go. In 2005, when Nexium, a personal and professional development company, promised to provide the tools and insight Sarah Edmondson, an actress and author, needed to reach her potential, she was intrigued. Over 12 years, she went from student to coach and eventually operated her own Nexium Center in Vancouver. Questions kept coming up from the organization's rules and practices, which came to a head in 2017 when she accepted an invitation from her best friend to join DOS, a secret sisterhood within Nexium. In 2019, she published Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, The Cult That Bound My Life. And in this tell-all memoir, she shares her story from the moment she takes her first seminar to her harrowing fight to get out of Nexium, collaborate with the FBI, help others, and heal. Her full story as a whistleblower is featured in the CBC podcast Uncover Escaping Nexium, which I listened to and devoured every episode, and The Vow, the critically acclaimed HBO documentary series on Nexium. I have wanted to talk to her for over 3 years now, and I'm thrilled to tell you, I tracked her down, and she's with me today. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Why did you wait so long?
Oh my God.
I was waiting for you. I was just waiting for your call.
I remember so clearly the day that I read that cover story, and it has just been a series of stories that continue to come out that it's just, I'm continuously in disbelief. My first question for you is if you could just tell everybody how you fell into Nexium.
Sure. The short version, the abridged version. Okay. Well, I'm from Canada and I'm born and raised here. I'm an actor. And in 2000, and I just took a family trip to an island and I like purposely didn't do anything Nexium related for a while. So I'm going to get back into this.
You know, it's funny you say that. I thought about that. I saw your vacation pictures and I did wonder that. Like, does she ever allow herself to just completely disconnect?
This was the first year because I go to this place, this magical island called Hornby Island in Canada every year since like the 70s. And this is the first year, like when I was in Nexium, I was caught up on these trips on conference calls and enrollment calls and like dealing with my coaches and my coachees and stuff. And then when I left, it was like getting out of the lease and spent almost the entire vacation on the phone, helping people wake up and get out and deprogram them. And then it was like preparing for the book one summer. And then it was preparing for The Vow. And then this was the first and legal stuff, you know, Nexium related legal stuff. It was the first year where it was like, just going to be with my family and be present.
And was your family like, thank God you're back?
Oh yeah. My immediate family just welcomed me with open arms and they're very happy to see me present and not all consumed with all that stuff.
Yeah.
But in answer to your other question, let's just get back into this headspace. I was an aspiring actress and not really where I wanted to be in my career, feeling like there was more for me, looking for more meaning in my life. And I met Mark Vicente at a film festival and I had just seen What the Bleep Do We Know, which was like in the early 2000s, a really big deal. And I loved the film and I wanted to make, you know, conscious shifting media. And Mark and I and my boyfriend at the time and his girlfriend at the time, we all became really good friends. And he basically just said, well, if you liked my movie, you'd really like this workshop that I just took. And he had just taken it also as a student. So I didn't research. I just trusted in the universe and jumped in and took my first 5-day a couple of weeks later.
And you were really just trying to figure out how to pay for it because it was, I mean, it's a pretty good chunk of change to,
yeah,
to spend. Yeah. And at what point did you think, okay, this is where I belong. Like this is starting to make sense. And I want to invest everything that I have into this program.
It wasn't immediate. in fact, my very first day, I was full of doubts, very skeptical, very closed off. And as you know, from the book, I, you know, was sitting there with my arms folded and scrutinizing Nancy Salzman's eyebrows in the 1980s videos that were being presented. I was like, I spent over $2,000 and half of this curriculum is being taught on video. Like that's so cheesy,
right?
You know, in a Holiday Inn. And I actually called Mark on that first day and said, you know, what did you get me into? And also researched. And by that point on the internet, there wasn't that much about like, there's references to it being a cult, but we'd already been taught that people are going to call us a cult and we'd already been given a response for why that is. So I was kind of, they did a lot of what they call preempting, mm-hmm. preempting certain concerns. And the very first preempt they did was, you know, you're a successful person. You're here to look at your limitations. And if you feel that urge to leave or that urge to bolt, you're never going to work on your issues. So, you know, you paid your money. Why don't you stay for the 5 days? So many times I had that urge to bolt. In fact, sometimes I'd go to the bathroom and like pretend to go to the bathroom just to get out of that room because it was so uncomfortable. And then I was like, well, I guess I'm not facing my issues. So I'd like get back in there, not knowing that it takes only 3 days to actually indoctrinate somebody.
So you and Mark built up the Vancouver office. So
yes.
How much time did you actually spend in Albany? Was most of it actually in Canada?
Most of my time was spent in Canada. I went to Albany a lot, but I was never there for more than like a week or, you know, 10 days for the Vanguard retreat, the corporate retreat that I know you know so much about. And I'm going to call you this lovingly, the NXIVM nerd that you are, because you called yourself that in one of your other episodes. And I think it's great because you can ask me more interesting questions with your with your library of wealth of knowledge about Keith and his escapades. But yeah, no, I didn't go for long. One time I went for, I think almost 2 months for a program called The Source. It was an acting program. And that's how long it was at the time. It was like a couple of days a week. And that was, 2015 or so. But yeah, I never went for long. I hated Albany. I hated going there.
Yeah.
I never said that because that would have been suppressive, but I, you know, in intuitively, I just tried to like, if I had a training, I'd fly in the night before and I'd leave the next day. And I remember Keith would always say like, why are you going back so soon? And I was like, well, you know, I'm working or, you know, I've got stuff to do, but I got in and out as quickly as I could.
I've always wondered about your relationship with the Salzmans.
Sure.
Because there's so much focus on Keith. Mm-hmm. And in your case, it was really a group of women that betrayed you. Of course, they're mm-hmm. under the direction of a man. Mm-hmm. But what was it about Nancy and her daughters that really pulled you in? And I can't imagine the amount of betrayal that you felt at their hands.
Thank you. I appreciate that question. You know, it's true. I never, well, I respected Keith. I didn't put him on a pedestal in the same way that many women did. And I never got close to him, thank God. But I did get close to Nancy and Lauren. And in fact, in the same way many people revered Keith, I probably had that more so for Nancy and Lauren. Mm-hmm. And part of it, I think, like right from the get-go, and I don't know if this is like just a cult, maybe all cultures have this, but in the Jewish culture, and I'm not particularly religious, but I call myself a cultural Jew. Mm-hmm. There's this, you know, this term mishpacha, which is like family. And you know, and I've since learned that a lot of cults use the word family when they feel like a kinship with someone, and it's part of like a recruitment tool, actually.
Yeah.
I felt when I met Nancy that she was mishpacha, and like our families were probably and probably legitimately are from the same shtetl, which is like village in Russia. Like I felt a kinship, and there actually could have been a relation because, you know, it's a small community. And I felt that closeness right away. And Lauren and I are the same age. We both had interest in theater. We were like a similar, exact same height. You know, there's just like a closeness and an affinity immediately. And at the same time with Lauren, she was in the structure of Nexium. She was doing the things that I wanted to do and was ahead of me. So while we were close, she was also like, you know, she was an inspiration to me. And same with Nancy. Like Nancy, the thing that I don't know how is, you know, it's not, I don't know how you'd show this in any of the documentaries, but like she would sit down with somebody and talk to them and help them evolve a huge issue that they were struggling with in a very short period of time, in a way that, if, you know, we'd all be in awe, like, wow, how did she know what question to ask? And basically it was, you know, live performance therapy is what it was,
and
in
it was
front of people.
Intoxicating.
Yeah. It was intoxicating. And, you know, she also, and I don't know how much of this was conscious for her, cause I'm not her, but she was really good at giving people the thing that they wanted. So you know, I think I'm pretty honest about this in my book, in addition to the community and the meaning, all that stuff. I think I, like many people, want to feel valued and feel special and feel important. And here I was in a career where, you know, I can do all the things an actor does, prepare and be thin or whatever, and you still not get the part.
Right.
be a good actor and look the part and look good or whatever, and you not get the part. And here I was in a structure where all of a sudden that it was supposed to be measurable. If you do X, Y, and Z and work through X, Y, and Z, you get to grow. And that felt, I mean, and I remember you asked this from Kelly, like, is there anything good of it? For me, there was a lot of good that came out of it, in that I did authentically grow through some big issues that I was struggling with at the time. Now, do I think Keith created this model? No. He pulled from a lot of other different modalities that are legitimate and already exist and pretended it was his. So those things, and that's been also a quick tangent, and that's been a big part of my healing, is to figure out where those things came from so I can still use them and not throw it all out.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Because otherwise it's like 12 years down the drain, right? And I did grow, and this is a Nexium term, but I don't know what else other word to use because it's a loaded term, but my self-esteem grew, like my belief in myself grew, and I became more confident and less needy. And that had a huge effect on my career and my relationships and my ability to make money and everything. So Nancy was very much like the guiding light for that. You know, like I wanted to be her. I wanted to be like Nancy, be like Lauren, be the kind of practitioner of these tools that could sit down with somebody and ninja their life. And not to pump my own tires, I was pretty good at that. Like but I don't think it was also necessarily because of them. My mom's a therapist. My dad's a counselor. I've been in this world for a long time. I had a bunch of tools in my tool belt already.
Yeah.
I was a camp counselor. I love to help people. I've always been, you know, for my book, I've always been that person to be like, oh, you know, Kate, what do you need? You need a Band-Aid? Like I've got a Band-Aid. I got the vitamins. I got the, oh, you dehydrated. I have an electrolyte pack in my purse. Let me give that to you. That's me. So that in this structure, I was like, it was a real opportunity for me to become more of that. And that's what they presented to me, you know.
Did Nancy remind you of your mother?
I mean, maybe like in certain like physical traits, you know, there's a certain petite brunette Jewish vibe that they both have, and they were both therapists. And I was hoping that they'd be close, which didn't really happen. I think I've since put together, I think it was a threat that my mom was a legitimate therapist. Right. And my mom saw through this from the beginning, but was not terribly vocal about it because she also understood how cults work and didn't want me to push her away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Nancy meets Keith, and at what age do we know? How old was she?
Oh God, I'd have to do that. I'd have to do that math, but I think it was 98 that they started Nexium, or 97.
So Lauren was in her early 20s?
Early 20s, yeah.
Okay. And when you met Nancy, did she ever talk to you about her marriage to Lauren's father, or was there ever a man in her life, or was she just always presented as this single woman?
Always presented as the single woman. Mm-hmm. I never saw her with another man. I never assumed that she'd ever been with Keith. When I saw some of the footage, and I think it was The Vow, of her and him, like teaching at the front of the room in the early videos, like from the late 90s. I mean, you know, when you can see when there's like chemistry between people, like sexual chemistry, I'd be like, oh, for sure they're, am I allowed to swear on this?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure they're fucking. Like just looking at the way that they're relating and like this sort of, you know, back and forth, cutesy kind of, I was like, ugh, that's gross. Because also, you know, now I know that he was with Lauren and, well, so many women, but that is a huge part of the betrayal. It's one thing I wrote into Lauren's, my victim impact statement before she was sentenced. I said, I just wish you hadn't lied to me and propped up Keith as this, you know, noble humanitarian, but also celibate renunciate. Mm-hmm. That's what we all believed. You know, if I had known that he had this women around him were his harem, I wouldn't have continued in the organization. You know, I wouldn't have participated. It's not for me. Other people want to have a polyamorous, open, whatever you want to call that, harem. Right. It's not my vibe.
So Nancy had two daughters. The other daughter, was she as involved with the organization or kind of one foot in, one foot out?
Michelle was involved, but she was, as far as I know, never with Keith. And also she did a lot of, she was a really talented, still is a really talented artist. And she did a lot of the administrative stuff. Like she had a job there, but she, I mean, from all my accounts, and again, from going in and out of Albany, she was not happy. Being an admin person for NXIVM would be the shittiest job known to man. Like she is really low paying and so much, just like, I don't even know what to call it. Just shitty work. And when I was there, like when I came in, and you know a little bit now about the stripe path, Kate, I came in as a student and she was a four stripe coach, right? Mm-hmm. And she was a four stripe coach for the entire time I was there. She never got to proctor, which is the level you get to get paid, until the last summer. And that's a whole separate story about how she got promoted to proctor. And it was based on basically Keith giving it to her. She hadn't, all she needed was to enroll one person. Remember, enrollment is part of the thing. She didn't need to enroll one person. I was like, Michelle, let me help you. I'm the enrollment queen. Let me help you do this one thing. She was stuck at that level. So I think she wasn't very happy. So yeah, one foot in, one foot out. You could say that in that she wasn't as dedicated for sure as Lauren and Michelle and Nancy were.
Do you think Nancy had any idea that Lauren was intimate with Keith?
I don't know. I mean, she'd have to be a moron to not put that together considering that he was having sex with all of those women. But
also, you know, your daughter, I mean, she's at that point, you know, she's almost 40 years old and she, you know, would want to get married and have a family. And Keith is promising her this quietly. Mm-hmm. Did you ever get a sense, because you knew Lauren so well, that her mother was asking these questions that mothers usually ask? Like, you know, do you want to get married? What about starting a family?
You know, I wasn't around them together enough to know that, but I would say, and Lauren did speak to this in her testimony, was that you weren't, there was a real emphasis on like, you weren't really supposed to have a relationship until you'd work through your issues. Mm. Like even my relationship with Nippy, my husband, was frowned upon because it was deficiency based, right? According to them.
Wow.
And so I think that, and I've since learned that really the only person you can have a relationship with is Keith, because he'll help you work through your relationship issues.
That reminds me of like Heaven's Gate, where they were all pushed to be asexual, because then you would be dependent on Doe, the leader, for all things.
I used to call Nancy my bonus mom, and she used to call me her bonus daughter.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, she was at our wedding and she came to meet Troy, our first baby, when he was first born, and gave me an expensive baby gift. Like she was just like that, you know? And at the same time, she could be incredibly cruel and incredibly mean on a dime, which is something my mom has never been with me. My mom is a very supportive, caring, loving, wonderful woman. And when I think back, and I think some of those moments are in the book, it's been a while, but like I used to get in trouble with Nancy for the stupidest stuff. And she'd just make people feel like shit.
Where do you think that came from? Like, do you know anything about her personal history?
I mean, I think that's what Keith was doing to her. I think, I mean, ultimately, an organization takes on the reflection of the leader. And, you know, this came up also in the CBC podcast when my former assistant said I was the worst boss ever. I don't know if you remember that, but
I remember.
Yeah, I was like, ugh. And I had to kind of face how that was true, you know, and my therapist, my cult therapist at the time was like, well, you were gaslighting and I know that I was doing it. I wasn't doing it to be a bitch. I was doing it because that's how I was taught to train people, you know, and we did what we were taught. And, you know, all the leaders did that to me. And I'd like to think that I didn't do it that much, but you know, I had to own that I did in some places and in some circumstances where I felt people need to be held accountable. And it came out like that, you know?
Do you have any idea of how Nancy felt once he was arrested and the time since then?
Yeah, I don't really know. I've only heard rumors. I've not seen her since the week that I got branded. And then that week was a Jeunesse training. And at the end of that week, I did a video for them about their new point system, which was like an incentive for people to enroll and get points, which was total bullshit. It was a separate story. And I didn't have clothes. This was a surprise to me that I was going to be doing this video and I had to borrow executive clothes from her. So I went up to her room and she lent me some clothes and she gave me a gold watch strap for my Apple Watch, which I still have. And I think it's really funny that I have this fancy watch strap from Nancy. It was the last time I saw her. And then about 6 weeks later, when everything was falling apart, I called her to tell her what had happened and to tell her that I needed help. And I was very upset on the phone and she never called me back. And I know people that were in touch with her at that time and said, she even played the message and said, do you see how angry Sarah is? Now in NXIVM, if you're angry and reactive, then you can't be trusted and there's something wrong with you, essentially. Jesus. Like emotions are not acceptable, right? If I'd called her and been like, so your daughter branded me with Keith initials next to my crotch, and I think you should call me. You know, like, then my message was something like that. I wish I'd saved it. But anyway, she never called me back. I've not talked to her since then.
I've kind of always wondered, like, how did this woman get to a point where she would be so cruel to so many other women? And to betray her own daughter in the way that she did, like something must have happened to her that predated NXIVM. Yeah,
maybe. Yeah. I've heard a number of different theories. One theory was that she was like, I do think that at her core, she's a kind person who wanted to help people. Like she was, you know, she was a therapist. Like you don't get into that if you don't want to help people, right? A nurse before that. But I think that Keith was really good at giving people the thing that somebody really wanted. And I think that when she got the power position that she did, it just like, I don't know if it flipped a switch and she became, I don't think she's a sociopath, but I think she's narcissistic or like power hungry, or I don't know. Like she got, you have to understand, like there was Vanguard Week, right? We had that whole thing for Keith. We had the same thing for Nancy, just on a smaller scale. We had a whole weekend where people would fly in from around the world and fill her house with flowers, with a festival of flowers, and do like performances for her and things like that. So I think that she had her own version of what Keith got. And I think ultimately she enjoyed that lifestyle and then turned a blind eye to things that were not cool and always assumed, like we all did, that Keith's practices, while not conventional, were still good intentioned, which is what people still believe who are still loyal. Mm-hmm. And I agree with Kelly's assessment, somewhere between 50 to 100 people maybe are still loyal, but they're falling away. Every day I hear about somebody waking up. And so I have hope that they'll wake up eventually. Everybody does. I did. Mark did.
Do you think Allison has come to that point? I mean, she has said so much, but she was so deeply into it. So that's my first question about Allison, is that whether or not you think she's authentically come to the realization that Keith was not who she thought he was.
It appears to be that way. I also heard a rumor through friends of her family that she woke up when the stuff about the underage stuff came up.
Oh.
That was her. Everyone has their own wake up. You know, there's a lot of people that left after me that, you know, since reach out, and Nippy and I play this game called Who's Going to Apologize to Us Next? Like, who's it going to be? Because we, you know, people get out and they're like, oh shit, like Sarah and Nippy were right. And I was such an asshole to them. And they call and they're like, I'm sorry. I just didn't know what to believe and whatever, you know, whatever their thing is. And somebody told us that after we left, they were like questioning things, but wasn't enough for them to leave. And then at the V week that happened after we left, this is like 2 months after, which we were so surprised that they were still able to even have a V week, but they did, a very small one. Keith presented Mariana, who's in her 20s, mm-hmm. and the fact that she was having a baby and like, you know, announced that to the community. And somebody there was like, wait, but like, I thought he was celibate, you know, like,
right.
So it was like, but it was just presented as like, and now I'm going to be a father. And so like the people that woke somebody else is like different people had their moments and depending on how dug in they were. But anyway, to answer your question, I don't know with Allison. There's some people who knew her better than me who think it's an act. Mm. My instinct is that she's awake and I hope that she is awake, but I don't know. I won't know until we speak and hug, and hopefully we'll get to do that one day.
Has the woman, Danielle, that was the person that branded you, or mm-hmm. any of the participants the evening that you were branded, apologized to you?
No. No, she has not. And it would be a very different situation in my mind if she did. Mm-hmm. And I've heard her speak publicly and say things like, Sarah's trying to get my life. She's trying to ruin my life. I'm like, no, I don't want anyone's life to be ruined.
Yeah.
I just want you to own that it was a really shitty and unethical thing to do to somebody,
right.
especially as a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that I try not to follow all of their shenanigans that we call them the loyalists,
right.
And not to give any more shine any light on their platform because it's so ridiculous, but they keep going back to like, well, you know, it was everyone knew what they were getting into and everyone knew they were going to get branded and da, 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 da. And all I keep going back to them, and I just wish that they'd hear this, is if it was a group of women who laid it on the table saying, you're going to do things, you don't know what it means, and you're committing to letting go of control and not having all the answers in this women's group that was started by a man.
Mm-hmm. Which is absurd.
Which is absurd in and of itself, which also was the same with Janess, and everyone, a lot of people question that. But that would be a completely different thing. They invited us into something and we agreed to it based on a lie.
Mm-hmm.
So everything else from there on means the contract is null and void. And that's the part that I just was, that gets me. And, you know, Danielle would be in a very different place in my mind and in her career and with her license if she just said, I made a big mistake. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't have withheld that information from the women I was performing this operation with. I knew it was Keith's initials. I withheld that because I don't know why she withheld that, but I'm guessing they withheld that information because they knew women would say no if they knew they were going to get Keith's initials on their bodies.
Also, she probably can't apologize because then she will lose her medical license if she's even practicing in any capacity still.
Yeah, that's there is a case that's still ongoing and they haven't decided what to do with her license. So we'll see.
Something I've always wondered about as well is that Nippy was pretty central to the Society of Protectors. Mm-hmm. And as we understand from the vow. From the vow, yeah. I mean, the teachings are so hellacious.
I know.
And I'm just wondering how he, and you can't speak mm-hmm. for him, obviously, but I mean, as he's starting to read the materials, at any point did he think this doesn't sound right? And then when you start participating in it, and then you have to live together, knowing that mm-hmm. he's central to this organization, mm-hmm. are you still unpacking some of the damage from those courses?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, still unpacking it. And I will say he became a quote leader in the organization at the tail end of it. He wasn't one of the co-creators or one of the founders. Those guys fell off and they brought him in because he was actually one of the only guys that was able to, similar to me in Vancouver, to actually get a group of guys together and do the training. So they brought him in as a leader. But he, you know, and this is, I feel like this is something that's really hard to communicate, both when I wrote the book and then watching The Vow and Seduced. It looks so overt, the misogyny, which we obviously can see now and we know Keith's intentions, but it wasn't taught that way. It was taught more like we were agreeing to do a boot camp, like for SOP, for example, we were agreeing to do a boot camp to go through a certain experience and to have a place where men and women could talk about their feelings and their own indoctrinations as growing up as women and growing up as men and where those indoctrinations were problematic and what we wanted to change. Like my indoctrination as a woman is X, Y, Z, and for him as a man. So people were having these explorations and conversations. It would, like, Keith never directly said women are less or women should be obedient or anything like that. It was more like, let's look at our indoctrination of society. And while we were looking at that indoctrination, he was slipping in his own. It was much more subtle.
But then they show video in The Vow where he's speaking to a group of men, and it's pretty overt, the things that he's saying.
Yeah. So the women didn't see that because there was stuff for the men and there was stuff for the women. So when I watched that in The Vow, I was like, is this like, it was so uncomfortable. You have to understand, like, for us watching some of the stuff in The Vow that we'd never seen, like the footage between Allison and Keith.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, did that really happen? Like, oh my God.
She's crying because she's so overtaken with his words. But the one.
And he's like star fuck. He's like fucking her with his skull, his eyes. And she's like, it's nauseating. There's footage where it's like, and even in Seduce, there's footage of him talking about, I don't even want to say it recorded, but doing something awful to a baby.
Yes.
You know, you have to understand the way that it's cut. It makes it look like he's saying that. And then we're all like, yeah, we're not. First of all, it wasn't like that. That I was there when that conversation happened. And it happened when this guy named Eduardo said to Keith, was in the acting program, what do you do when you're an actor and you're playing a role that's grotesque, like something you can't connect with? And he's like, well, you have to get into the role, you know, put yourself in the shoes and think about, like, what's the worst possible thing? And the worst possible thing that he came up with was that example. Mm. And he went on this whole monologue about, I can't say it, hurting a baby. And I remember when I watched that going, if this video were to ever get out in the world, it would be so bad because it'd be taken out of context. And truthfully, what is true is now we know he is a pedophile. And I think it was a subliminal thing that he was doing, but he wasn't saying go do that, or it's okay to do that. It was in the context of playing as an actor, playing a grotesque murderer, or playing a destructive person. Mm. Right. So out of context, but it made it, the way that it looked like is that we were sitting there clapping to this grotesque thing. Do you know what I mean?
It did. Yeah.
So there are things like that throughout, like taken out of context. It makes, and why I don't like it is because it makes us look stupid and complicit in his disgusting ramblings, which we never did. He was much more manipulative than that. So it's like that video, which I'm sure you've heard about, where he says, you know, I've had people killed for my beliefs.
Right.
Right. And we were like, when that came out, we were like, what? And then it was like, no, this is what we were told. He was saying, because of him, people have died because of his beliefs. That's how it was spun. Mm. Because he's got such extreme beliefs, people have died and got kidnapped or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So, but I do think it's true. That was a subliminal warning to people around him saying, watch out. But he always can use plausible deniability, saying, no, that's just an example.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Well, even in The Vow, the episode where Barry's article comes out, he sits and the women have come to him and said, we're leaving and we would like to be paid for our services. And he meets with a group of people to explain to them why so many people have left. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, they look like a bunch of people that just, you know, found an ad in the paper. Like, they just look like newbies, kind of like stars in their eyes, like believing whatever he's going to say. Mm-hmm. And he sort of drops in the middle of this monologue that essentially the monologue is like, I'm being extorted and there are criminal charges that are going to be against these women. But he does say, and I did have a sexual relationship with some of them, but the way he just slips it in Anybody else even remember who's that. Like normal would go like, wait, what? But this one woman asked a question. She goes, may I just ask a question? And her question was, are you okay? So he basically admits that people are, even if it's true, like trying to extort him, that he's had a sexual relationship with members, that there are people that are leaving the organization. And then this woman in the back says, are you okay?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Nuts. And how often did you have to play volleyball?
I honestly, just as much as I hated Albany, I hated volleyball. I probably went less than 6 times in my whole 12 years, if you can believe it. I always found an excuse to not go. And the main reason was that I needed sleep. And right. I got shit for it. My higher ranks, particularly this one woman, Esther, would always say things like, what does it mean, Sarah, that you're choosing comfort over an opportunity to spend time with the smartest man in the world?
And were you ever like, he's not the smartest man in the world. I can think of like thousands of people. I mean, for you.
On my inside. So I've since learned there's like the cult identity. Kelly talked about this too, the cult identity and your true identity. And I had my cult identity and somewhere inside me always, I was actually quite defiant. And even towards the end, I did all the things that I was supposed to do. I filled in my coach hours and like pretended to do all the penances. But inside I was like, fuck that shit, you know? Right. And it's like I towed the company line, which is why I didn't go all the way. I mean, obviously I let myself get branded and was indoctrinated enough to say yes to that, right? On the night of. But there's a lot of people who went way further. And I just, because I always had my foot in Vancouver, you know, I had maintained friendships, not many, sadly, which I'm currently trying to rebuild with people outside of the group. And I had enough people just being like, what about this? What about that? And friends and being like, well, what if like 10% of what's in the media is true? You know, wouldn't that concern you a little bit? Like the media can't spin everything.
Right.
They can spin and they can exaggerate and there's hyperbolic statements, but it can't be based on nothing. So what are all these allegations against Keith?
What about this Rainbow Cultural Garden? Did you know much about that?
Oh man, that's a whole other story. I mean, I was trying to get it going here. I never really got it off the ground because the business model was so terrible and I couldn't get anyone to even consider investing with me because I think it was like 25 grand just to have the tools, just to have access to Rainbow Cultural Garden, which all it was hiring nannies who spoke different languages. Mm-hmm. The Rainbow Cultural Garden was basically, we would pay, once you pay 25 grand, $25 an hour to have an English speaking nanny, like a Russian speaking nanny, Spanish, Mandarin speaking nanny. And of that $25, I think $10 went to them and $15 went to Rainbow Cultural Gardens, which essentially this one woman named Loretta. So I was like, but where does all that other money go? Like, shouldn't that go to like curriculum to like then teach the nannies? You know, the whole business model sucked so badly. I mean, I love the concept of having different languages for my kids.
Was this Loretta Garza?
Loretta Garza, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I just couldn't get off the ground because nobody wanted to do it because it wasn't feasible and no one could answer the question, where does this money go? Basically went to Keith and Loretta.
And then to find out that they are doing all of these warped things, like having people sit down and watch terribly violent videos.
Ugh, I mean, it's awful.
What is going to happen to that doctor, Brandon?
He's had his license revoked. And as far as I know, he's still a Keith supporter and thinks that this was all made up and he's a victim. Now, of course, there are no victims except for the victims of us now. I can't be a victim. I mean, I know the hypocrisy of it all makes no sense.
And how involved are the sisters, the Brompham sisters?
Well, as far as I know, Clarice is still in jail and is still funding some legal, Keith's legal stuff. And I have no idea what's happening with Sarah. I really don't. I mean, there's rumors that she's hasn't left Europe because she doesn't want to be arrested, but I don't know if she didn't do anything like Claire did. In fact, I liked Sarah, and did not like Claire. I think I've been pretty clear about that in my book. I tried.
Yeah.
I tried.
I really didn't like her. She sounds like a horrible person.
No, she's really was very difficult to work with and really awful to people under the name of helping them. I just realized I didn't finish that. Just to wrap up for 1 second about the Nancy thing. I don't know how, because we lost communication. I don't know how contrite she is. Last I heard, she sees herself entirely as a victim, which I believe she is partly a victim, but I don't think she's owned, or I don't know how much responsibility she's taken for her role in propagating the lie about Keith, about who he was, and the fact that she was really awful to a lot of people. So, and there's still a lot of people out there who think that she's still great and she's helped them a lot. And, you know, she didn't yell at the VIPs. You know what I mean?
Of course not. No. Allison and Nikki, Frank mm-hmm. Parlato told me that they had plans to have a family. Keith was going to be the father. They would raise 2 children as siblings. Does this sound like, does this track for you? Or does this story just sound just ridiculous?
It sounds totally ridiculous. Neither women were gay the entire time that I knew them. So, and both of them only had boyfriends before they were with Keith. It doesn't mean you can't change teams, but I also know that Nikki was trying to get her, you know, find a way to be in the US legitimately the whole time she was in NXIVM. And as we know, there were multiple arranged marriages for people's citizenship. I can think of 5 off the top of my head that I know of where people weren't really together and got married so that they could stay in the US. So that's my take. I'd be very surprised if it was something other than that.
Is there anything, any other misconception about the group or a story that's floated that is totally untrue about how the organization operated or a relationship within the organization, anything that's been out there that you'd love to correct?
The first thing that comes to mind is just, and this is partly for me to protect so many of the students that came through and didn't know about the dark stuff and the sex stuff. And, you know, like when people are like, well, is it a sex cult? I'm like, well, yes and no. For most people, it wasn't a sex cult. The truth is it was a sex cult the whole time. We just didn't know. What is a sex cult? Like, there are people having sex. Yes, it's not about that. It's about the coercion and the manipulation and the abuse. And as we know from the trial, you know, there were purchases being made for sex toys and a dungeon and butt plugs and paddles and all sorts of kinky shit, which again, fine if you're into, but it's not what I signed up for. Right. And that's the problem. It's the deception and the lies and, you know, the bait and switch. Come in for this and you're actually going to get this, which is really what all cults and, in my opinion, MLMs and organizations where there's some deception happening. But I think the main thing I want to clear up is that most people didn't know about that stuff. And when people make the association, oh, they were in NXIVM, they assume they like had sex with Keith or something. You know what I mean? And it wasn't like that. It was inner circle and then a very wide circle of supporters. And the supporters gave credibility to Keith, including the Dalai Lama.
Which is insane.
I know. And lots of celebrities. I'm trying to think if there's something else that's out there that's not true that I can't remember, but is there anything that you well, want to ask?
With the dungeon and the sex toys and all of that, would you have been put in a position where you had to be participating in any of that because of where you were in DOS?
Well, luckily I got out before I found that out, but I don't know if you remember this part in the book. I mean, I was already waking up at this point, but remember we had a readiness drill fail and we were instructed that we had to paddle each other as the consequence. And I was in Vancouver with none of my sisters, my sister wives. Anyway, 2 of my sisters were in California and 2 of the sisters were in Mexico. So they all paddled each other and videotaped it and sent it to Lauren to prove that they had a consequence to their failure. So I managed to avoid that. Meanwhile, I was figuring out how I was going to get out and dismantle the whole thing.
Do you know what has happened to your collateral?
I wish I knew, but mostly my collateral, I'm not worried about. I mean, the worst has already happened for me with, I don't know if you know this, but my video is out there. They released that on the last day of the trial, which was it was awful for me to know that people had seen that. And that, you know, it's very vulnerable for me, but what was good about it is that it helped the prosecution prove that collateral had been released. And part of Keith's defense was we were never intending to release this. This was only for the women to keep their word and to feel committed and to be accountable. It wasn't meant to be released. So again, I asked this to, if they would have a conversation with me, I'd say, if it was never meant to be released and it was only used to keep people in fear and keep people in line, why naked pictures? Oh, maybe for Keith's personal spank bank. You know, like they can't wrap their head around. And Keith has been notoriously taking close-up photos of women's vaginas. I hate to say this in your podcast, but this is now
it's
all
it's the truth.
It's been revealed in the court documents, in the transcripts, even before DOS. He would have sex with a woman and then take a close-up. And it's in his heart. Like, they can't see that. DOS is really a heightened version of what he's been doing his whole life. Getting people loyal, getting people committed so they won't leave him and eventually leave him because he's a disgusting little troll.
I'm also worried about the women that were a part of the group and if he abused their daughters. I don't know, maybe even their sons too. Are you aware of those cases?
The only thing that I know about, again, this was also in the trial, was the woman who was one of those top line DOS masters who offered up her 16-year-old daughter to Keith. And I don't know if that happened. I don't think it actually happened. I think she got out before that happened. But yeah, part of his quest, apparently, and again, all of this that I'm sharing, I found out in real time with the rest of the world in the trial that he was looking for a virgin. He was looking for virgins because I think I learned this from Frank, is that he became impotent, right?
Right.
And so he believed that a fresh young woman would increases potency. So I don't know about any particular abuse with the kids. That wouldn't surprise me. Honestly, nothing would surprise me now.
Yeah.
Like the level to which he was willing and wanting to destroy people and hurt people. And even to this day, like having people dance outside his prison, like deranged strippers.
Right.
I mean, he's just enjoying that because they just look crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what he does. He's like, how can I manipulate them from prison? How can I ruin more lives? And they think they're being noble. It's so sad.
So now here we are a couple of years later. Do you still feel like things are, could they continue to unravel in the organization?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy because it's still unraveling. And I mean, Nippy and I are so much happier and like away from all of the toxic stuff, but you know, it's still a part of our lives.
Right.
We have our, you know, we have our own journey. Back to what you said earlier, we're still unpacking things. I'm like, wait, is that, do you believe that? Or is that like a Keith belief? You know, like let's look at that. But also we're still, I mean, probably me more so than Nippy. I'm still keeping tabs on where people are and are they awake and trying to get them information that could, you know, have them think a little differently or have a different perspective. So it's still unraveling.
What has been the greatest thing that's come out of this? I mean, it's an awful experience, but I have to believe that something that you've learned in the process, maybe about yourself or other people, that has made made you feel stronger.
You know, I believe that too. Part of me wishes I'd made some different decisions along the way, but ultimately, I love my life now, and ironically, I joined looking for meaning and purpose, and it feels very purposeful for me to be able to take this crazy, awful experience and turn it into education for others. And, you know, when I joined, my thought of like what a cult was people in robes and shaved head and goat's blood and,
right.
and, you know, Jonestown drinking Kool-Aid. And now it's so much more. And I feel like if I had had what I know now in the vow or in books or different forms of media, I wouldn't have joined. I wouldn't have even stayed past day one because I would have been like, red flag, red flag, red flag, out.
Yeah.
And to know that people messaged me saying, I was in a group, I just started, I happened to start watching the vow. And because of that or your book or the podcast or whatever, I left and found out it was a cult and thank you. Or, you know, I've been out of my cult for 10 years and I don't have any resources. And then I saw the vow and that explains what I went through and, you know, thank you. And things like that. And that just like, you know, it means it's not for nothing. Like I can help people. And that's ultimately who I've always been. I just, you know, ran on the wrong direction for 12 years. Mm. So to get back on that, like, that makes me feel good about myself and makes me feel like I can make a difference, which is what I set out to do. And what makes me feel stronger is that I didn't walk away. And a lot of these groups, especially NXIVM, exist because people figured it out and slipped away quietly. And you could leave. People left NXIVM very quietly, and they didn't get sued as long as they didn't say anything or, you know, talk shit about Keith.
Yeah.
And we made a very conscious decision that we couldn't just do that because there were people that needed to be freed and saved. And that was the right thing to do. So that makes, you know, that creates a strength in me, which is just so ironic because Keith used to say, character is not character unless it's tested. And my character was tested.
Also, there were so many threats throughout the organization where someone would say, I would go to the press. And there was that frustration for so long, like no one's paying attention. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it came on the heels of the Me Too movement.
Yes.
It was almost like the universe let it come out at the right time that enough people would get fired up, which resulted in the arrests and then the sentencing.
Yes.
It may not have worked out that way had it not been included in this swell of people that are awakened to misogyny, to abuse, and to structures, you know, power structures that have been set in place. So that might be the good thing.
Huge. 100%. Yeah. That's the abuses of power that were exposed in that whole swell is just, you know, that fires me up.
Me too.
To know that I could, you know, that could be part of that. And again, gives meaning and makes me feel like it wasn't for nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm proud of what we did. So that definitely makes me feel stronger. And it also feels like I can empower other people to speak up and share their story. And I'm so glad that women are finally, and you know, there's more people. Kelly's writing her book and people are coming out and sharing. And I think that's really important because more the merrier.
The irony is you were in Jeunesse with this mindset, like we're going to change the world. And the way you changed the world was actually walking away from the organization and
yes.
being loud about it.
Yeah.
So your intent was to do something that shifted and you actually were successful in that. It just didn't happen the way that you thought it would.
Can I read you what I said to Lauren in my victim impact statement? Because it's about that. I said, I wish you true freedom away from all of this, including your mother who brought you into this mess in the first place. Ultimately, I hope you feel proud of yourself for waking up out of so many years of indoctrination to see the truth and to testify against Keith. That took a lot of strength. I can only imagine, but you found the essence of what we thought we were doing in the first place, that you found the true empowerment and strength as a woman who, in the end, did the right thing. You helped show the world that KR is a con man and it was this demonstration of actual character to do the right thing. And that absolves any feeling of anger I've held for you and your actions. We've all been betrayed, but your role in the trial was the proverbial nail in the coffin. And that means something to me. Again, I trust the judge to see this entire nuanced picture, including your cooperation with the government. If he finds you honestly remorseful, then I know he'll recommend the appropriate sentence. May it bring closure, healing, and forgiveness. Forgiveness from those you have hurt and forgiveness for yourself. And I think that's kind of sums up how I feel towards her and what you just said. And for myself too, like we found true empowerment.
We did.
Ironically.
and there are people that will listen to this and who have read your book and you would have never connected with them because they may have never taken a course.
It's honestly
bigger than anything
bigger.
You could have ever done.
Yeah. It's so true. And the relationships I've made with mostly women, but some men too, but people all over the world that I've never would have met otherwise. And yourself, you know, like how cool to have broadened my perspective from this tiny little, very unsuccessful cult, actually, that we, you know, we thought we were helping people. I think we reached somewhere between 17 and 20,000 people. That's not a lot of people.
Right.
You know, our podcast alone has had over 300,000 downloads.
That's
way
right.
more than the course itself.
Yeah,
never mind the vow.
Take that, Keith Raniere.
Take that. Yeah, take that.
Oh my God, you really want to piss them off? Have somebody just keep sending letters to the prison, like you know, Sarah's uploads are really up. You never had a podcast.
He tried to have a podcast. You know, there's in the mission statement, there's a line about pledging to make as much money as possible within your success plan. Mm. So whenever I hear like, oh, Sarah's just doing that. So their narrative about me is that I'm just doing this for the book deal. That I made it all up for the book deal. And my response is, yep, just making as much money as possible within my success plan.
Exactly. And by the way, the guy like lived like a slob. I mean,
yeah.
He had the worst sheets, his hair, I mean, the volleyball outfit. The best was when Seth Rogen put out that tweet. You guys went to Jewish camp together?
We went to Jewish summer camp together.
Amazing. I couldn't stop
That made
laughing.
My day.
That was
I know.
Great.
I wrote him back and thanked him for that. I haven't seen him since we were like in our early teens, but obviously I follow his career and I'm super proud. And that was very sweet of him to do that shout out.
So tell everybody what you have going on now. And by the way, since The Vow came out, you had another baby. Did you?
Yes.
Were you pregnant during that? I don't think so.
I had another baby and his name is Ace and he's 2 now.
So cute.
Yeah, he's the best. I got Troy and Ace. And that's really, like, honestly, my main, when I'm not doing cult related stuff, I'm really into being a mom. That's just great.
Which, another thing, if you had still been in that organization, you know, you would have still been under so much pressure for enrollment and courses, et cetera. And you wouldn't have been as present as you can now.
Yeah, I did miss some key moments in Troy's early life because I was on that hamster wheel.
But you can forgive yourself for that.
100%.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
And then tell everybody about the podcast and where they can find you and the book too.
Sure. Yeah. So the podcast, we're really excited. We're just working on our contract for 2. I'll be able to announce more about that soon, but it's called A Little Bit Culty. Looking at the lines between devotion and dysfunction. A lot of it is related back to Nexium, but every episode is with a different guest about a different cult or a different abuse of power. And that's like on anywhere you listen to your podcasts. And us on Instagram too. I have the book. So it's called Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, the Cult That Bound My Life. And that's also anywhere you buy books, but also on Audible, which I'm stoked about because I narrated the Audible. Mm. I also narrated, this is just to plug somebody else, but a resource for somebody who is exiting a cult or wants to help people exiting a cult is called Take Back Your Life by Yanya Lalich. And
I love her.
She's amazing,
she
right?
She should be president. I love her.
She's the best. So I narrated her, that book, and I recommend that to anyone. And that resource is on my website as well as a ton of other resources I recommend for people in different stages of cult recovery. And also I'm part of a movement called I Got Out, which is trying to do a similar thing to #MeToo, where people can connect with other people who are getting out and tell their stories and take the lid off the shame of these scenarios and be more connected to a community that's healthy. And I think that's it. What else? Am I missing anything?
And where can they follow you on social media?
Oh yeah. Social media. I'm on Sarah Edmondson, just my Sarah at like Son of Edmund. And we also have A Little Bit Culty on the Instagram. And what else can I tell you? I think that's it. I'm on Twitter, but I don't use it very much. I got to get better at that. Instagram is where all the magic happens, I think.
Well, I'm so glad I finally tracked you down.
I know, me too.
Yeah.
High achievement, especially for a Nexium nerd as yourself, because you can ask me so much more in-depth questions. And I did take a note of something you said on your interview with Frank. As you said, you asked him how long did Sarah's husband take before he knew about it? And I kept it from him for about 6 weeks. Mm. So that was he said 3 months, but it was 6 weeks. Just wanted to.
That's torture.
It's torture. Well, so we were in different cities and I was like trying to wean Troy. So we were like in different beds and it was like, you know, it was actually easy to keep. And I had bandages on it. So I was wearing like shorts for like, it was a wound, you know? And the other thing I wanted to tell you really quick is that Kelly said that somebody called her from Canada, remember, to help get her out. And I think this is just a fun fact that I don't think I've told anybody, but we had in Nexium this thing called the coach tree, where like the people that you enrolled and the people that enrolled you, like, you know, the pyramid, that structure, we use that to get information out. So if there was like an enrollment push for something or a new course or a cancellation, we'd use that structure to say like, you call your people and you call your people and you call your people like down the tree.
Yeah.
You know? And they were always trying to make sure it works. So like it could be work like a fire drill. They used to do drills through the coach tree to make sure that people would get reached.
Yeah.
And we use that same coach tree to make sure that everyone was out and that they knew about the branding and like to disseminate that information. So I remember when I was like, okay, you call Kelly, like you, like I was, we were orchestrating that whole thing in a, like a war room that we had set up in Vancouver. So that you did not see on camera. And it reminded me when she mentioned that.
That's so awesome. I love
Kelly. I'm so glad. I love her too. And I'm so glad that she got out when she did.
Thanks, Sarah, so much, and hope that you guys go to iTunes and click on subscribe and leave a 5-star review. Join the Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey, to join more discussions about this episode and the things that we're watching, listening to, and reading all week long. You can find me on Instagram at @KateCaseyCA. I talk to you about what I'm watching each week, and you can see my must-watch list. I also post that on Twitter at @KateCasey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. To get that must-watch list, go to katecasey.substack.com, and you will get that in your inbox every Monday. You can find me on TikTok at @itskatecasey. And finally, my Patreon has bonus episodes. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/KateCasey. Cannot wait to circle back with you next week. I've got an incredible upcoming guest as well.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.